Hello and welcome to Cigar Cast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We are recording live from Crown Cigars and Ales here in beautiful Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Debman. I'm joined, as I am every week, by an inquisitive-faced Shane Reeves.
I'm just wondering why more cigars don't have naked women on the wrappers. I mean, it's such a great ideal.
But then you spend more time looking at it than you do smoking it.
Well, yeah, but you can take the wrapper off. I mean, that's the purpose of taking the wrapper off, ain't it? And all, but I chose...
Better yet, put a clothed woman on the label with a naked one underneath. And so when you take the label off, it'd be like those pins that you used to get at the truck stop where you...
Or the lighters that when you lit them, the woman's bikini melted off. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting here, happened to notice that right as you were starting to talk. I'm thinking, I don't know any other cigar that has a naked woman on the wrapper.
And how many of those cigars have you smoked that you're just now noticing that? That's what's incredible.
Well, that's interesting because that's one of the reasons I'm smoking it tonight.
Okay.
This may be the second one in my life I've ever smoked.
Really?
Maybe.
And that's not the Maduro. That's the natural. That's
the natural.
The Florida Las Antillas.
We've talked about it a million times on the show.
That was how I got you into my father's cigars, I thought.
No,
it was the blue label first?
Yeah, it was the blue label. I think on the first ever episode of the Cigar Cast, you smoked this cigar.
I think I did because we were recording from the Franklin location of the cigar shop at the time, and this was one of only a handful of cigars that were actually smokable that they kept in stock over there.
Oh, yeah. A multitude of reasons why that shop did not flourish. One of those being that. But anyway, so just what I'm smoking this week, I might as well tell everybody
now that we've talked about it,
is the My Father Florida Las Antillas. And it's Nicaraguan binder and filler. The wrapper just says sun-grown. They're not letting a lot out of the bag here with My Father and this cigar, but it's been around so long, you either like it or you don't at this point.
Right.
My Father, the La Florida Centillas has nothing left to prove.
No, and they came out with the Maduro about a year and a half ago. No, about 3.5 years ago. And that was one that I thought really rounded out their portfolio really well. I still really do love that cigar. I should pick it up more often.
Well, that's what I was thinking when I was in the humidor is, you know, I see this cigar all the time, and we talk about this cigar regular. This is probably one of the few cigars in the world that I've ever talked about more than I've actually smoked it.
That's funny.
And what are you smoking?
So I'm smoking a cigar that we also have talked about quite a bit on the show, but I haven't actually smoked one on the show yet, and they just got them in here, and I'm really excited. This is the Charter Oak Connecticut Shade. Probably one of the best Connecticut Shade cigars out there. And it's a Sumatran binder over Nicaraguan filler. What else is there to say about it? It's phenomenal.
You know, I may be getting a little palate fatigue off of that cigar.
Is that so?
I'm working on kind of my second box of them, of it being my morning cigar. And I'm finding myself some mornings reaching for something else. Just going to get something different just because I may be starting to experience just a little palate fatigue.
I can understand that. I mean, well, and the morning cigar ritual for you pretty much started with this. I mean, you were up until fairly recent, till the beginning of the COVID thing, you really didn't do the morning cigar thing.
Yeah, you know, and I probably will get back off of it at some point. At some point I'll probably say, oh, you know, especially when it gets cold.
But I also wonder how much of your palate fatigue is morning cigar fatigue in general.
Could very well be. Could very easily be that. You know, after when it starts getting cold and it's cold in the mornings, I probably won't smoke one. I'll probably just go on to work and not worry about it.
Because that's one of those things for me. I really do love a good morning cigar. But some days it's just not conducive. You've got too much else to do. You've got too much work to do or the weather or any number of things.
Oh, yeah. Anything can derail that particular. The evening cigar is kind of a staple.
Yeah.
My wife and I have a cigar time. I'd like some sort of a rule or regulation telling people, hey, 6 o'clock, take your rugrats in and feed them. and let us have our cigar hour. Don't have your kids out there screaming their head off running around the neighborhood.
Well, the best thing in the world is that the iPhone has a do not disturb function. And so, you know, you don't have to put on airplane mode or anything like that, but you can just, boom, I'm on cigar time. No calls come in.
I just leave mine in the living room.
Well, but you're sitting there playing poker on your iPad. Don't you get the stuff coming through that, too?
Nah, I don't have that connected.
Ah.
I haven't connected it up that way. Maybe what was wrong with our show notes this week. But anyway, so our first new cigar this week, since we are discussing the Charter Oak.
I am so, so excited about this.
Charter Oak Habano to debut in a few weeks. Is that pronounced correctly, Habano, not Habano? I hear people all the time say Habano or Habano.
It's definitely Habano. The strength with which you pronounce the H is... It doesn't really matter.
Now, is it Habano or Habano?
It's Habano. If it were the... If it had the tilde over the end, that's where you get that Y sound.
Is that a tilde or an umlaut?
No, umlaut is two dots. The tilde is the little squiggly line.
Okay. I'm glad we're getting this all out in the open.
In today's Grammar Corner.
putting a lot of information out there. So, Foundation Cigar will launch the Charter Oak CT Habano, a new line in the extensions for Charter Oak. I like it. I like the concept behind it. I like, okay, we got the Maduro. We got the Connecticut. Now let's hit something in between.
Yeah.
Here's going to be the question. So the wrapper is going to be an oily Habano wrapper grown in Ecuador. So it's going to be an Ecuadorian wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
The Charter Oak kind of known for its Connecticut wrappers.
Yeah. But this, you know, this kind of speaks to what you were talking about in your little editorialization in the show notes this week, which is, you know, the Charter Oak has had some backorder issues lately. The thing is, this cigar has been so incredibly popular. When you make a cigar this good at that price point, they are going to fly off the shelves.
Right, it's going to be hard to keep them.
It's going to be, and I don't think that's a shortfall on Foundation's part. I think it's a product of the fact that, you know, from seed to shelf, it's about a year or more for most of the cigars that we smoke. So the cigar only having been out for a few years, it's hard to kind of bring production up to demand if you don't know what it's going to look like ahead of time.
Well, and in the straight black and white of you looking at it in the show notes, it probably looks a little harsher than it is, because I would much rather them have back order issues as pull a Casa Magna. You know, Casa Magna's Colorado Robusto, when it got Cigar of the Year, was excellent. And they rushed production and they rushed everything and they ruined that cigar.
Well, and that's the thing. And so I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, and they had picked up a Gurkha Ghost at their local shop. It was recommended to them by somebody, and I even asked. I was like, "What does this person look like?" Because I thought for sure it was. They were like, "No, that wasn't it. It was the person who worked there." Okay, but it was the new one. Apparently, there's a new Gurkha Ghost that has like a goldish label rather than the silver one. And I explained to them that I have not had a Gurkha Ghost in about 7 or 8 years because the first launch was incredible. But because it was so popular, they rushed production following that, and now they all taste like ammonia. Sure enough, at the end of that cigar, they text me and they said, is it possible for a cigar to be messy? Because that was one thing, and I said, absolutely. And they also said, the other thing I can't get over is the overwhelming diesel fuel taste in my mouth after I finished smoking. I said, yep, that's because they rushed fermentation.
You know, and Gurkha is bad to let more ammonia cigars out there than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're what the deal is with their quality control department. Or lack thereof. That's a very easy thing to catch, you know.
Yeah. All you have to do is smoke one of them. But I say all that to say, you know, so they're no longer going to use Connecticut wrapper grown in Connecticut, and instead they're going somewhere where they can keep up with demand a little bit better. And I think that's the absolutely best way to pivot on a cigar line that you know is going to be very popular and high demand.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I like that they're keeping the price point. They're not changing the price point. They're not trying to say, okay, this is now going to be the top of the line in the Charter Oak line. They're not doing any of that. They're keeping the price point nice and regular, putting it together. I really like what they're doing here.
Yeah.
I hope that they don't have too many back order issues. And I guess I can start talking to our local owner now because I just now got him to get the Connecticut's
in. That's right. Start ordering the Habano now. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, you know, now... I can extrapolate a little bit from this Aficionado article that, you know, that there is a supply issue of the tobacco being used. So they're looking at alternate ways to kind of minimize downtime. But the other thing is now they've got a third horse in the stable, which by virtue of just spreading the love around should also help curtail some of those back orders as you've got more for people to go through before you ultimately get
But are they going to run into opposition? Because the opposition that Austin had to bringing the Charter Oak Connecticut in, I don't want another really good $7 cigar in my shop.
You can't sell cigars if you don't have cigars.
Right.
And whether you like it or not, people like $7 cigars. Not everybody's smoking a $12 cigar three times a day. That's just the way of the world. So is it better to sell three $7 cigars or one $12 cigar?
Well, there's debate in that because there is labor costs associated and there is other factors, storage, maintenance. You know, there are other factors. It's not as simple as saying, okay, this is three $7 cigars is $21 versus $12. You still got to pay the person behind the counter to sell the cigar. You still got to pay the shipping. You still got to pay everything to get there.
Okay. On that point, though, when I come in here, I buy two Charter Oaks every time I'm in here. If they're out of Charter Oaks, I buy one cigar because of the price point. So in that case, it's one customer versus one customer. You know, if you're talking about three cigars over the course of the day versus one cigar over the course of the day, I get your point. But we're talking about an individual customer's buying habits changing. I think it's worth rolling the dice and doing a little bit more volume.
Well, I do too. I don't believe in that portion of his philosophy. Now, the other portion of that philosophy is he's trying to sell his house blend at that same price. And his house blend is so far inferior to the Charter Oak as to not even be in the same wheelhouse.
Right.
And also, there is some of that. So I don't know how...
It's a good thing he doesn't listen to this show.
No, I've told him it is.
No, I know. I know.
I've told him that it's a terrible cigar. He knows I don't pull no punches. So it is interesting. I'll be interested to see if he decides to bring this one in or if I get the same thing of, well, do we need another good $7 cigar? Which, speaking of another good $7 cigar... First premium bundled cigar by AJ Fernandez coming.
I'm excited about this too. I think this is the first week in a long time where we've brought two new release stories, and I'm equally excited about both of them.
Hey, gentlemen, names are important. Names have power. Blend 15, really? They could even be El Blendo Siente or something, you know, something with a little flair of
Quince.
Quince, whatever. Whatever, could we not have given it? I like that I got away with El Blendo, but you picked out Quince.
Well, that was the one I knew. I don't know what blend is in Spanish.
But come on, fellas. Let's spend 20 minutes in a boardroom, five guys. Hey, this is, all right, Blend 15, what are we going to call it? Blend 15, brilliant.
Johnson, you're getting a raise.
Try.
Let's go to lunch.
Were we naming it on Friday at 4:49? What were we doing that this became named Blend 15?
Well, here's what's interesting about that to me. Because you'll notice the way it's branded and packaged. They're packaged in five packs, similar to a cigar with a similar name. So we've got Blend 15 in a plain brown paper wrapper in a five-pack. Remind you of the Buffalo 10?
kind of familiar price point.
Yeah.
And all, it is interesting. So you're saying it's even lazier than that?
Yeah.
It is. Okay, we can't call it Buffalo 10. Let's call it, we need something starts with a B, blend 15. There you
Bingo.
Go.
Bingo.
That's better than 10. So you're saying it's even lazier than I initially considered?
Yeah, I am, actually. Hopefully they'll have, you know, there's a, Robbie up at Big Boys has a Buffalo 10, and when I drive through there, I typically pick one up. Man, whatever this last release of this batch of Buffalo 10s that got released, those things are wound tighter than a German clock. You give them a little squeeze to it, might as well just be a stick.
Beat them against your coffee cup, clank, 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 yeah. Clank, clank.
Yeah, so I haven't smoked one because that's one of those things that'll put me off really, really quickly. And so, and every once in a while you'll do that. You'll get one that's really, really hard, but it actually draws well. But I have had some draw issues with the Buffalo 10. Saying all that to say, if the Blend 15 is similar in, I mean, it's AJ, so I know I'm going to like it. Similar in price point.
And usually
it could be a replacement.
Usually in this price point, this style is a medium filler cigar. This is still a long filler cigar. So they're still using long filler tobacco in this and all. And they may be recognizing that there is, you know, more market for less expensive cigars.
Yeah, and it's going to come in a 3.5x50, a 5x50, and a 6x50. So a couple of sizes to choose from.
But as a reference, I love that Aficionado or Journal, Cigar Journal gives us this. As a reference, the retail price for the Robusto will be Germany euros 420. That's what, $7?
Let's
12 bucks?
See. No, it won't be 12 bucks. It'll be.
I have no idea what the euro against the dollar.
Well,
damn metric system.
The Figaro. So $60 US is 45 euros. Back. Yeah. So what, $4.50? So $6?
I guess.
About $6.
So, which is about what you'd expect in this price range. You'd expect that five being the ideal price, seven being realistic, eight probably not being out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of excited about that. A premium blend by AJ in a budget stick.
Yeah.
I like that thought. Okay, let's jump off cigars. I've got to talk about this cutter. I've looked at this cutter long and hard over the past couple of days. The only reason I have not purchased one is because I can't find this gunmetal finish. All I can find is the ugly stainless steel finish.
Oh.
And also the Figaro Cigar Cutter by Fox Knives. This is from Aficionado. Menaggio, Italy is known as the city of the knife for its long history of crafting top-tier blades. Okay. If they call it the city of the knife in Italy, do you think it has anything to do with knife making?
Maybe just a little bit.
I really think it may be a little more mob oriented than. But so Fox Knives makes great knives and all. I've seen Fox Knives, been around them. I really wish Hen and Rooster or Boker would make a cigar cutter. I'd be all over that because that's some of my favorite knives. But. And how have the Germans not got into cigar cutters? But anyway, I'm chasing rabbits. We'll come back to why the Germans have not made cigar cutters yet. And all. It looks kind of like a hybrid between a cutter and a pair of scissors.
Yeah. It's a class 3 lever. So you've got the fulcrum, the pivot point, on the outside of the work and the leverage. Which is going to make for a really smooth... I know, I just went full nerd on you. Your eyes glazed over.
You wouldn't think that man had sunk a boat this weekend.
The designed and sank a boat this weekend.
Built it, designed it. Put his child in it and sunk it this weekend.
Yeah. More on that later. So that's because I know about leverage and not buoyancy. So what that means is that you've got a much smoother action and you've got a much more direct feel to the pressure and the cut. And I think it's I think the design is going to lend itself to a very practical piece of equipment here.
It looks very maneuverable. I like the fact that it looks like something that I could even sharpen myself. And I really enjoy that portion of it, because the trick to sharpening something like this is you actually sharpen the flat side. You don't sharpen the bevel. You know, right. It's, when I sharpen my electric fillet knives, I only sharpen the flat side. I never sharpen the bevel, and it does a great job. So,
have you been able to find this for sale anywhere? Even their website doesn't give you the ability to purchase.
Yeah, you have to Google it.
Okay.
And all, and most of the tactical EDC guys have it.
Okay.
And all, the tactical EDC companies generally have these. Running about $58 is what I'm seeing on it.
Not bad.
You know, and you're going to pay something for shipping. But I haven't found it that's not just the ugly stainless steel. I need to find one in the gunmetal. Now, they do have a really cool leather case. I really do like
that. That leather case is nice.
Yeah, that's very sharp. But Fox has been making knives since 1977, and it's the official knife supplier to NATO. So I guess if you need an official NATO cigar cutter, that would be this.
How funny is it that that's a category?
Oh, see, here we are again. We're $60 in the United States, 45 euros.
That's how I was able to...
Yeah, so extrapolating out that cigar at about $6 was probably a pretty good guess.
Yeah.
And or $7, whatever it turned out to be. But really like it. I like the look of it. I like the feel of it. I'm concerned... You know, so my concerns with this cigar cutter. One, are the holes big enough for my fingers?
Yeah.
Because when I see something that looks this nice priced at $58, I wonder if it's going to come just only in Smurf sizes.
Well, and you've got some pretty decent sized fingers, you know, so it looks, based on the pictures, you can't really tell just from the cutter itself, but looking at the size of the case, it looks like those finger holes would be suitable for you.
How many times have we railed to put something for scale in these pictures?
Well, they've got a cigar.
Oh, yeah, because they only make one size of cigar.
No, but that's pretty obviously a Robusto.
Sure.
So that's a 52 ring. So, yeah, it's about a 60 ring gauge hole.
We'll find out. But I do like it. I like keeping it from being used for something other than cutting cigars. Yeah. Would be another concern, because it does look pretty handy. So I'd have to constantly be watching my significant other that she wasn't, you know, cutting something, a piece of string or a dog treat in half or something like that with it when I wasn't looking.
I do have to say, I have looked at about 6 or 7 different websites while we've been talking, and it's sold out everywhere, even the stainless steel one. So this, hopefully, that's just a first run and doesn't end up being a limited edition kind of scenario.
Well, I would really like to find a cigar store that actually had them that I could go touch one prior to purchase.
Right.
That would be awesome, but that's probably a tough putt. And all, because everybody wants to be Calibri or Zycar or something along those lines.
Yeah. Now, this same company, Fox Knives, also makes another cigar cutter that we've talked about on the show before, and it's the one that had that kind of sliding pivot that sliced right as it went through. Same basic ergonomic design, though.
Yeah, just if you needed more leverage to cut your cigar. What type lever is that? Is that a type 4 or type 6? Sure.
There are only 3 classes of levers.
Oh, okay.
I'll break out the PowerPoint after we finish recording.
Hold on, folks. I'm really looking forward to this. And all. But anyway, okay. So you'll talk about Toscano?
Let's take a break.
All right, we can take a break.
And then we'll talk about Toscano and a little bit more than that after this.
Welcome back to the Cigar Cast. This is one of your hosts, Shane, sitting across from the man. Someday he's going to sit down for a podcast, and I'm going to activate the trap door.
I knew there was going to be a trap door reference today.
Well, I had that thought that, you know, I've been designing houses for 20-something years.
Yeah.
And I've done escape tunnels. I've done rooms.
Hidden bookcases.
Yeah, hidden bookcases. I've kind of run the gambit, but nobody has ever asked me to do a trap door.
Is there any practicality to a trap door if you don't want to maim, injure, or kill the people going through it?
Well, yeah. If you had something you wanted to hide, having a trap door to slide away Prohibition era style
Okay. Could
be real handy. You know, there's the amount of metal storm shelter-like boxes that you can pick up now that you can drop in the ground. You know, you would think somebody would have a humidor or a wine cellar or something that they wanted under a trap door.
Yeah, I could see that, but at the same time, a staircase seems so much more practical.
Well, okay, so I'm going to shoot. If I shoot you down the trap door, would you prefer shark, piranhas, or acid?
Did you say shark, piranhas, or acid?
Sharks, comma, okay. Piranhas, comma, or acid.
Shark.
Slide, no slide. Do you want a few minutes to think about it as you're coasting down, or do you just want to plunge right into the water?
Well, as the victim in this scenario, I would prefer the slide. That gives me a bit of a heads up.
Okay, so shark with slide. Got you down.
I'm going to watch where I step when I come over to your house now.
These are the important questions in my life.
Speaking of important questions, how are you enjoying the FDLA?
It's amazing. I mean, I can't believe I don't smoke this cigar more often. This is definitely a cigar that is moving up in my rotation. The price point, the flavor, the body. The thing that impresses me most about this cigar is the body. The body is so...
And you're not just talking about the label.
Right, I'm not just talking about the naked woman on the label. It's just so full. You know, I actually think the label is probably one of the reasons I haven't smoked this cigar more often.
It just looks too busy?
It looks old.
Yeah.
It just looks like an old-timey label.
I will give you one more criticism of that cigar speaking of the label. There are few cigars that I have more issues getting the label off without ripping the wrapper of the cigar than that cigar. That, for whatever reason, that is one of those where, you know, the advice of burning it down so that you heat up that pectin.
Right.
Is never more relevant than with that particular cigar.
But, I mean, the flavor of it's great. I honestly think the reason I haven't is because it looks like your grandpa's cigar.
Yeah. But there's a reason it has stuck around this long.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, if I was going to revamp the My Father line, that would be one of the things I would say is, okay, let's revamp this label. Now, granted, their new stuff ain't that great. The colors on the Promisea are just horrible.
Yeah, but it is very on brand. I mean, it fits within their other stuff.
Yeah.
Jaime Garcia is probably the only band in the lineup that doesn't have that type of mural-esque design.
Victorian, Italian, whatever.
I wouldn't go
whatever.
Victorian, but...
Well, whichever it is.
Old world.
So what do you think about the Connecticut?
I love this cigar. It's, you know, it's not every day that I smoke a Connecticut at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but today it just works.
Well, it's everything you want in a cigar.
It is.
And I mean, the price is right. The flavor is right. The taste is right. I noticed you're smoking it. When I got here, you were actually smoking a Charter Oak Maduro. Mm. And all. Is there any culture shock going from Maduro to the Connecticut? Have you had any?
No, and I thought there might be. This is the first time I've ever done that, gone back-to-back from the Connecticut Broadleaf to the Connecticut Shade. And no, there was no palate shock at all. But I am one of those people that do believe, you know, most people say that your follow-up cigar should be stronger than the first.
Right.
That's not always the case. And especially when you have a cigar that's as unique and flavorful as this one in a Connecticut shade, it can still play second fiddle very, very well.
Well, and a lot of times, I don't think it has to be stronger, but it can be significantly different.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite follow-up cigars, if I'm sitting here and I know, okay, I've got about 45 minutes before I want to hit the road, but I'd like to have one more cigar, and I'll often reach for the Toscano.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Italian fire-cured tobacco is such a...
Well, it's Tennessee fire-cured tobacco.
Oh, yeah. Such a... Well, it's made in Italy, but anyway. It's such a separation from what traditional
from
tobacco...
Else.
Yeah, it's just so unique to itself. It kind of feels like, okay, now I'm starting a new cigar adventure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of which, believe it or not, I didn't do that just to transition.
I really thought you did that on purpose.
And no, I don't want it to ever feel forced.
How about the cigar cutter in this photo?
Yeah, see, that looks like the cheaper version of the other one. So the Manuel del Cigarro Toscano. So a manual about Toscano cigars.
So this is Italian, so that's actually Manuale.
Okay. So
I'm just having too much fun with that tonight.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to be criticized in every language tonight. And all, if we miss anything, y'all send a message, let me know. Hey, how's your Russian?
No, that wasn't it.
That wasn't the sign?
No.
Okay.
I just insulted him in sign language for those of you not getting the video feed.
20 years after the first edition, the GUNIT Publishing House, is that pronounced right?
Sure.
Released the new edition of this book. So this is a book about how Toscanos are made. All right, here's my thing. Who keeps books anymore?
I do.
Okay, what normal person keeps books anymore?
Oh, there are tons of... There is something about a physical book that you just can't get with a Kindle or an iPad.
I'm just saying, I could watch a YouTube video about Toscano cigars and probably glean more information than I can holding the manual.
I am glad you brought that up, because September is Deaf Awareness Month.
Okay.
I don't want a video. There is very little in this world that frustrates me more than reading a headline to a news article that I want information on. And you click on it, and all they have is a video, no transcript, no closed caption, nothing. I'm out.
Who makes videos about closed captioning anymore?
A lot of the news outlets, when they put their videos online. Yeah, there are tons of it. In fact, if you follow me on social media, you've probably seen me calling a whole lot of people out about not captioning their videos lately. So, yeah, I prefer to read, because I at least know I'm going to get the information, because, you know, I don't want a video.
Okay, can we just put maybe a file out on the internet so that we got the choice?
Well, and that's, I'm all for, you know, do an audio book, do a visual book, you know, do some companion piece. I'm all, that's fine. But I'm one of those people, I would much prefer to read whatever it is than get it from a video.
Well, it is interesting, because it talks about the journey from the production of Kentucky tobacco to making the cigar. So we grow the tobacco in Kentucky, we ship it to Italy, and then we put it in cigars and we ship it back.
Right.
Could we not import, you know, 3 weeks a year, a couple of Torcadors, just throw this thing together?
You would think, right?
You would think that you get a couple of Italian guys over here, feed them a cheeseburger. And
well, but the thing is, you know, so when I was in Italy a couple of years ago, Toscanos are very popular. It's not just an Italian-made cigar that's popular here in the U.S. It is, when you think of cigars in Italy, it's Toscano. So, yes, it does seem to be kind of counterintuitive that we ship the tobacco over there just to be made and shipped back, but the majority actually stay in Italy.
Well, and the tobacco is... Now, I wonder, is the tobacco cured there, or is the tobacco cured here?
It's cured here, which is why it's that fire-cured tobacco, because that is something that is unique to this area.
So, literally, we're just shipping it over there for them to put it together. It would seem to me that it would be much easier to bring Mohammed to the mountain.
Perhaps. I mean,
it just doesn't seem to me that we should continue shipping mountains of tobacco over there.
Fair enough.
But I'm sorry, everybody I know is waving at me tonight.
It happens. But, you know, we actually happen to know some people that we can talk to about that. Let's see if we can elicit some change in the organization.
I'm just saying, could we send a couple of rollers over? I got an extra room at my office. We'll put them in there. We'll let them produce cigars for 3 months. They probably could make enough then to sustain. And not $2 or $3 off the price. Just take care of shipping.
But they're so cheap anyway. That's the thing about the Toscano. You know, you mentioned it's a great sort of 45-minute smoke or whatever. But one of the things that I love about the Toscano is it's got a great price point. And it's really different from the stuff that we smoke regularly. But they're so good.
They are. And the other piece of news about this is the holiday pack.
Yeah, so this just was announced last night that Toscano's releasing a collection box this year. It's going to contain six of their sort of greatest hits, the Classico, the Antico, which is my favorite, the Originale, the Garibaldi. Actually, no, the Garibaldi is my new favorite. The Stilinovo and the 1492. It's also going to have a Toscano lighter and cutter in the pack, retail for $30.
Well, and so the unique thing about the Toscano cutter is it is actually designed for you to be able to cut the cigar in half.
Right, because I remember we were gifted a couple of Toscano cutters from Adrian, or it may have been Michael Capellini, I don't remember which one. And you made the comment, you don't need a cutter for these cigars. Why do you make a cutter?
Right.
And it was, no, to cut it in half and share it with a friend.
Right, because that is the beautiful thing about the Toscano. You can whack it in half, and two people can smoke it.
Yeah.
And the lighter's a good lighter. I've got the, you know, we was also gifted that kind of lighter. They give a good lighter, too.
Yeah, I've got an identical lighter to that, but it's branded Crown Heads, and I use it all the time. It never leaves my car. They are fantastic workhorse lighters.
Yeah, just good, cheap, inexpensive lighters that really do a good job.
So six cigars, a cutter, and a lighter for $30. That's a great office gift if you've got somebody.
Yeah, great Father's Day gift, great, you know, meeting gift, you know, anything like that really works out.
Yeah, so keep an eye. They should be shipping fairly soon is what Adrian said. So be on the lookout for those for sure.
All right, so I challenged you before the show started to my philosophical question for the night.
So lay out the question,
right,
and then while I'm finalizing my answer, I want you to give some background on where this is coming from.
So the question is, if you were allowed, you know, this is what I'm known for in the cigar shop. And we need a name for this process, because everybody knows when Shane sits down and says, I've been a pondering something, to buckle up.
To put your waders on. It's about to get deep in
here. Right. We're about to wade into the deep end. So I'm giving all the listeners a taste of what it's like to smoke a cigar with me this week. Philosophical question. If I give you the power to make one law, you can make one law. I'm not putting a lot of restrictions on it, because to me, the beauty of a philosophical question is when you ask it, the questions that are asked back to you reflect a lot of what the psychology of the person
right
is.
Into that,
oh, yeah,
didn't
you
I?
Played right into my hands. So, one law. You know, you say this is the law, and it's going to go through Congress. It's going to go through all of the process that they sung to us about on the Sunday after school specials, and it becomes law. I'm giving you one law in which to make for America.
So as far as I know, pretty much all of our listeners either live in or are tangentially close enough to the U.S. that they recognize that this is an election year, and it's been, which is always a nightmare for us, just because you just get hit over the head with nothing but political ads and stuff like that. So obviously, that was in my head pretty immediately, and so it's going to sound a little generic, because I think this would be the answer for a lot of people, but it's term limits for Congress.
Okay.
I couldn't think of a law that would affect average citizens on a day-to-day basis that I really feel is necessary when compared to, while it wouldn't necessarily affect how you and I work and go through our day-to-day lives, I don't think that there's much more of a way to impact the greater good than getting the career politicians.
Then stand back, because I've got the one. This would either fix America, or it would bring it to such a crumbling amount of chaos, my name would be cursed in history books.
That's likely to happen anyway.
We all got to have a goal.
There you go.
We all should have a goal. I want to make it illegal for employers to hold taxes out of paychecks. Totally, completely. Every soul in America has to write a check for their tax burden quarterly and hand it to the government.
That's going to cause crumbling disaster. Like, Yeah, I get your premise. I understand your point because it kind of falls into what I'm getting at, is we need to give the power back to the people. And if every single wage earner in the U.S. was forced to look at the number on that check that they cut to the government every 3 months or every year or however...
To see the money in their bank and say, man, I had a great couple of months.
And then there goes a quarter of it.
Yeah, and then turn around and have to stroke a check for that amount. There would be no such thing as political inactivity.
Yeah. So I think we're both kind of trying to achieve the same goal, just taking different sides up the mountain to it.
Well, so you get rid of one politician, you're replacing him with another. Mine, we're hanging politicians in the street.
Well...
Under my regime, we are now, you know, there becomes so many problems because, okay, there's a certain amount of people that can't save money for rent every month because they're not smart enough to put money back. If they've got $20, they feel that they must spend $25 at all times.
Let's also recognize that there are also people that can't pay their rent because by time the taxes are taken out of their paycheck, they don't have enough left over.
Right. So... now the IRS has to decide who's worth chasing down. At what point is it is chasing this money? Are you spending more money to chase it than you are to get it? If you get the money from them,
well, because and that's why I say ultimately what would happen is that the country would just come crumbling down and screech to a halt because yeah, you've got so many people in this country who are scraping by to begin with, and to have the ability to hold that money back is going to be tough. And so how do you punish that? Do you put them in jail?
Right, and then they're not producing anything.
And then they're
anything?
Not producing anything anyway, and now you're breaking, you know,
and you can't garnish their wages because that goes against my law.
Yeah, so I do think that would be an absolute atrocity. But I appreciate what you're getting at, you know.
I think if the average person had to come to grips, you know, like a small business owner does. If the average person had to come to grips with actually how being robbed blind they are, it would be devastating.
And we were talking about that last week after the show. You know, a lot of people want to be a business owner, but until they try to do it and recognize that you have to renew your business license every year and that costs money, and then you have to deal with you know, payroll taxes and sales taxes and you have to, and most people don't think about, you know, when the PPP loans first back in March were passed to the CARES Act, you know, Shake Shack, was under fire from people for taking part in that because they're a multi-million dollar a year company with franchises in many different states, and they're a very successful business. And the idea was that this was supposed to kind of prop up small local businesses. And the thing that they kept talking about was the fact that they made $60 million last year or whatever it was. I don't know how much money they actually made. When you talk in terms of revenue, you discount labor costs, overhead, rent, materials, food costs, packaging, just because you're bringing in X number of dollars doesn't mean that that's just going right into the pockets of the owner of the business.
Well, that's the hardest thing about the building business is you get to handle a lot of money, but it's very easy to just be handling it.
It's other people's money.
Yeah, it's very easy just to be able to handle it and not carry any home.
Right.
And all, most builders don't know if they made any money till 2 years after they quit. And all, it takes that long to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so there's a, you know, you have to, you know, I was explaining to you, I have a very specific formula for my real estate commissions that I use to distribute my real estate commissions. And I'm probably going to have to, as they get bigger, I'll have to modify that formula.
Probably.
To include a bigger piece for taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think everybody in America should have to. I think they should. I think they should know what it's like. I think it would be rough on the front end, but I think the things that would come out of it would be so beneficial. I think voter turnout would go through the roof.
I think you're right. I do. I think that would be one of the, like you said, the on the front end, making that change would be very, very tough. But I think I'm gonna play a politician here, and I'm gonna sneak something into your law, which, you know, on kind of the third page, which is that can we include taxes in the price on the shelf? This $9.99, but it's $14 by the time you get to the register. Can we just put $14 and then let the business sort it out?
Or can we just say everybody's paying X percent of income tax? Now, I'm a big fan of the flat tax. Mm-hmm. I think the flat tax is the best way for any country to run. I think everybody, whether you make $1 or $1 million, should pay the exact same percentage. I don't think anybody should pay a higher percentage because they decided to work harder. So can we just say, hey, all the sin taxes gone, all of the privilege taxes for owning a house gone, all of the impact fees gone, all of these things, everybody's going to pay X percent, and that's it. And I'll just do away with the IRS altogether because it's a simple equation. Hey, I made X. X
I
percent.
Pay that.
Yeah, 25% of that is X. Send it. And this is all the money you people can ever get. So learn to live on a budget like the rest of us.
Right.
And all, which would probably accomplish yours, because 4 years of living, having to live on a budget would make congressmen want to leave, if not die.
Well, and that's the thing. Pensions don't really exist anymore, but let's say that your company had a pension. You know, you have to be, you know, vested in order. In other words, you have to work 20, 30, 40 years for that company before you get that money, or at least the full value of it.
Right.
Congressmen, do you know how long it takes them to be vested in their pension, which is the exact same income that they made while they were serving?
No clue.
1 year. Not even a full term. If you serve 1 year in the U.S. Congress or Senate, whatever that income for that position is, you get for the rest of your life.
But they do spend a lot of money on the front end getting elected.
They do, but not their personal money.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that ends up being personal money.
There are, but most of it comes from donations and things like that. But if you know that you're only going to get two terms, so, you know, 4 or 6 years or whatever, then you're probably not going to spend as much on your campaign. And it's going to come down to how effectively you can communicate your position, which is something that it's a standard we should hold our politicians to. I mean, we would eliminate a lot of these attack ads because it wouldn't be worth spending your money on that when it can go to other resources.
I'm all for it, but I firmly believe that's the law I put into place. I firmly believe that's the law that changes everything and all. And I do think it's a rough 10 years when that law first goes into effect.
Oh, yeah. There's anarchy and turmoil. But eventually
you end up with a more educated populace, because now they know, hey, since I'm having to budget my tax, why don't I put something in there for groceries, child support, you know, education. We're now forcing people to have to budget. It's no longer I go to the business and put it on auto deposit and never see it, and money becomes invisible. So,
all right, well, we are running up to the end of the show and we're about to lose battery, so why don't you pronounce judgment?
It's a 7.
Wow.
I don't hand them out freely, but it's a 7.
I mean, I never would have expected that.
There's nothing other than the label, and I refuse to deduct any points for labeling.
I stand by that position.
The price is perfect. The blend is perfect. The flavor's there. Everything is there. This is as good as it gets in the cigar world.
So I'm going with a 6.5. And the only and I considered 6.75 because this cigar I also think is about perfect. But it's perfect at a price point. If this cost as much as that did, I don't think it would be quite as good. Now, there's only a few dollars. There's only about $3 difference
it's
between the two cigars.
It's not a large chasm.
It's not, but I really do like this cigar. It's good for all occasions. It's good for all budgets. It's good for, you know, all palates, I think. So it's a 6.5 for me.
Yeah. I mean, I can't give it – I can't fault a thing on the blend or the flavor. Well, how do they get a hold of us, Trey?
You can reach us via email at info@thecigarcast.com. We are on Facebook.com/TheCigarCast and Instagram and Twitter @TheCigarCast.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Until next week, have a great cigar and think well of us.